Thank you so much for helping this broadcast be possible, as well as Dennis Moynihan and Hannah Elias, who are with us in Edinburgh, and our whole team in New York. I'll be with Brian Stevenson and Sarah Lewis with the documentarian Ken Burns and the former British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, as well as Wynton Marsalis and others today at 4 o'clock Edinburgh time at the King's Theatre, tomorrow at the Bertha Dock House in London.
This land is your land. This land is my land.
This land we love belongs to all of us. Yet not everyone is treated equally. Right now, millions of Americans are fighting for the things promised to all by the Constitution. Freedom. Justice. Equality. The ACLU is leading the fight to protect our civil liberties. Together, we can protect and advance our rights nationwide. Because we the people means all of us.
This land was made for you and me.
Learn how the ACLU is defending the right to vote, free speech, and other civil liberties at myaclu.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3, also FM. And over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock, it's Tuesday, it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Really. Thank you. good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight. Kyle's in the other room. Oh, now he's in this room. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, what you doing?
There's no need to run that fast in this kind of weather.
Yeah, I was just finishing up something. Uh-huh. This coffee's going to be
You're finishing making me a cup of coffee.
It's going to be really hot. I'm just saying, don't sip it like as soon as I give it to you.
Well, that's what you're supposed to. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to argue about it. A little pain is good for us sometimes, but especially when it comes to hot coffee. Yeah, it's the thick of it, isn't it? It's the waning days of summer. Wow, it is the waning days of summer, isn't it? Yeah, next month. Next month is fall. Later part of the month is fall. Kind of looking forward to that. Not a big fan of the heat and humidity, which has been plaguing us. Actually, not as bad as many other places, and certainly not as bad as other places dealing with fires and smoke in the air and all that. We had that a little bit at the beginning of the summer, I guess I should count my blessings, even though I really don't like to do that. So Kyle and I have been at wit's end dealing with organizing a major event coming up this weekend. You probably know about Hacker Conference. We're not going to be on the other show tomorrow because we're just going to be too busy running around like crazy people because that's what it requires. Actually, a lot of people are running around like crazy people right now. Everyone's crazy. Everyone's out there organizing. It's fun. I mean, this is the 17th time, believe it or not, we've done a conference like this. It used to be every 2 years, and now they're every year. And somehow we wound up back in Manhattan, so that's going to be amazing. And it's sold out last night, which I don't think has ever happened before. But it's not going to be one of these massive, huge events, you know, where there's tens of thousands of people or anything like that. No, it's actually a little bit calmer, and that's how we like it. So that people can have an experience and talk to other people and enjoy the area. New York City, Midtown Manhattan. Wow. Who knew we could pull this off again?
Yes, the star of the show.
Uh-huh.
New York City, right in the middle of it.
It is. It really is. I have to say, WUSB gets credit for this. Because not only did WUSB give me the ability to learn how to speak and stand up for my own opinions and learn about other opinions and other ways of life and all kinds of music and things like that. Not only that, but we were part of what's known as the Intercollegiate Broadcasting System. They had a conference every year, and they had a conference at this hotel in Midtown Manhattan called the Hotel Pennsylvania. You might have heard of it, right across the street from Penn Station. And, boy, that was an incredible place. I believe Benny Goodman played there. They had the Pennsylvania 65,000 phone number, old building, and just a lot of history. It's you know, the kind of place that you just treasure. Unless you're a billionaire who just wants to make money, then you tear it down and have a giant hole in the ground, which for some reason is better than a prospering hotel filled with people from all over the world. So, you know, we had our conference there, too, because WUSB had, or IBS, that WUSB was a major part of, had the conference there, and I realized, wow, there are places where we can actually have non-super rich people get together and share ideas. And 1994 was the first hacker conference called HOPE, Hackers on Planet Earth, at the Hotel Pennsylvania. Wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for IBS. Yeah. And, well, obviously we couldn't go there during COVID, and then after they tore the hotel down, we couldn't go there again. But this year, we discovered a mere two blocks away another hotel, also old, also all kinds of history, called the New Yorker Hotel. And that's a much more New York name than the Hotel Pennsylvania. Go figure. It's on the other side of Penn Station, on 8th Avenue instead of 7th Avenue. But boy, it's a fascinating place. It really is.
Yeah, I would say, like, just the styling is totally different. The way it actually looks, it is, I believe, an Art Deco structure. There's a lot of everything from signage to fixtures and just the whole interior and everything you're surrounded by speaks to that design. And it's kind of fun to walk back and see that as distinct from the Hotel Pennsylvania. I'm not sure exactly what style that was. It was big.
Chaotic.
Chaotic. I don't know. I'm sure someone with architectural chops would school me in that.
It was made by the same people who designed the current Penn Station. Actually, the Penn Station that was torn down in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
they designed that as well. It wasn't one of their shining examples of architecture, but same people.
And it endured and was mm-hmm. sort of utilitarian and functional over the decades.
It endured, you know, a bunch of hackers going there mm-hmm. every couple of years. And if it could do that, yeah, it could endure anything.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. And the more you, I think, got familiar with that place for running an event, I think you just really just felt at home there. I think a lot of people have sort of an affinity for the place, even now the empty space that's there. And I guess we're kind of in a really interesting form of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've really noticed in planning and talking to people that are excited about this event, they kind of share this, like, I don't know, mutual feeling of familiarity, but also newness and, like, uncertainty and just mm-hmm. the sort of unknown of, wow, we're in a new place. But a lot of people that were a part of that space we occupied before are returning and really sharing in the vision we have for a new place. So I'm kind of excited that alone.
It's amazing to hear from so many people we haven't heard from since the last time we were at Hotel Penn. And that was in 2018. So that's you know, a period of time. And I guess, you know, a number of people weren't really interested in going to Queens and or a religious university. To be honest, though, you know, they didn't bug us with their religion, but in the end, they kind of got to us because they couldn't tolerate freedom of speech. And what I refer to is we had some attendees at the last conference last year at St. John's University that were anarchists, and they had pamphlets, brochures, what do you want to call them, and some of them were critical of the police. And apparently, that's enough. That's enough to if you get the ire of somebody high up, that's enough to just shut you down. And what happened here is it was particularly sneaky because they never talked to us about it, ever. You know, at the conference, everything was great. Everyone was having an amazing time. We heard about it months later. In fact, it was shortly after our good friend Greg Newby passed away. He was one of the main coordinators of the Hope Conference. And I heard from the people at St. John's, and they just said, yeah, you guys can't be here anymore because brochure, it offended somebody who then took it to the president of the university. And this was after the conference was over. So we were never told about it. We were never told about it being reported to the president of the university. We were never part of any hearings or even Q&A about what this was all about. We were just told, you're out. And that, to us, I mean, at that point, there were people saying, wow, that's unfair. We have to appeal. There are people at St. John's saying, no, we'll get you back in. But I got to tell you, the ship had left at that point, because as soon as you do something like that, the image is tarnished forever. You can't ever go back. You can't go and say, oh, yeah, you guys completely stomped on freedom of speech and had no regard whatsoever for an honest exchange of ideas, but we're going to let that go and come back and hope it doesn't happen again. No. We'd rather not have a conference than do it that way. And for a while, we didn't have a conference. We didn't have a conference at all. We were looking at other colleges throughout Queens, throughout the New York City area, and just coming up empty, coming up with places that just didn't suit us at all. You know, I'd have to think about how we actually found the New Yorker. I know it's only
that's really polite what you just said. There's a lot here. You're doing a fantastic job, but I think you need to relax a little on some of the confusion. I mean, we had a list. We had done surveys. We went back to ones that we had looked at before, and also some of those were just out of this universe, out of the stratosphere as far as what's reasonable for an educational event. And that is, I think, something that is okay for us, like, coming away from that experience, because we don't really, like, we're not lost about our sense of purpose, I think, to that degree. I mean, there's certainly, you know, things we're always looking at in who we are and what we want to be, but this was like an easy one. It was like, oh, you want to put us in that position to be completely hypocritical just to stick around. Like, there were people that wanted to help, and it's so gracious of them to stick up for us. And I love that energy. I wish it wasn't such an easy choice for us, but I think in the end, it's okay for us, because it did have us looking at those surveys we'd done, and in this case, a hotel that I believe Greg had mentioned, and we looked at, revisited, and we were talking to other people, trying to get contacts, and something that was reasonable for what we discovered about our event being really educational, and that was something I think we did take away from having been at a university, and is going to be, you know, instructive in our purpose going forward.
Yeah, we were able to make it work. It was something we didn't really expect. We thought it would be, you know, impossible. But when creative minds get to thinking, you find a way. And as soon as we did that, as soon as we said, yeah, you know, the conference is coming back to Manhattan, and this despite all of the nice things we were saying about Queens, and I still believe every nice thing we said about Queens, how it's such a diverse place, how they have the biggest Chinatown that you can find anywhere, really, outside of China.
I'm going to miss that part of it.
It's still there. It's just,
proximity.
You know, we told people, it's not that hard to get to, but it was a pain. It was a pain. You had to take, LIRR or a long subway ride. You know, if that's assuming you're coming from Manhattan, which not everybody was. People flying in. I'm not going to extol the virtues of a place we're no longer at.
It's in the past.
But as soon as we said we're coming back to Manhattan, all these people emerged out of the shadows saying, yes, at last. And that's the magic, We're going to have reunions and see all kinds of new people as well and just start some new history.
I think that enthused and surprised us in ways we hadn't anticipated, but it's welcome all the same. And it really is something that we tried. We brought away a lot of experience, a lot of lessons, a lot of good conversations, and are primed for a lot of new ones here. And I think we will make this a fantastic experience and truly a new home and a place of gathering and socializing around a lot of these issues and kind of organizations. We have so many people that have really like turned up in the way you said.
Well, Kyle, you in particular have done such amazing things, such incredible magic acts to make this event possible and much better. And the true extent of that will become known a bit later. But wow, I'm blown away by your efforts and the efforts of so many other people as well. We have great teams. I say teams because we have multiple teams, people who have never met each other, and they're awesome, they each have their own skill, their uniqueness to bring to the table, and they are what make hope, and that's the magic, I think, of any group of people. WUSB, another example of that.
Yeah, and I think the people that have been a part of it and are familiar and, our groups, you and I, our staff, like everybody involved, has been around this and can kind of help people understand what it takes through experience. But what I'm really amazed at with this incredible team of people is, and what I'm really understanding and what hits home is the importance of communication, because I think it's sort of a dynamic thing. We're welcoming of people that want to contribute, and also people have lives, as do we. And so, like, we have to be able to let people volunteer at will, but also recruit and get more people involved to keep things working well. And I think onboarding can be a little difficult. I can't believe I said that word, but I am in no way a business communicator or manager in any professional sense in my mind, but I've definitely accumulated some skills here. And what I found in bringing people in, it can be a little bumpy, especially under the types of circumstances we're going to be talking about and the whole story of how it came together. But by bringing that experience and then kind of doing what you must do to lead people to understand that, they're teammates and they're working on this thing together, the importance of coordinating together and communicating and working independently have been just so crucial, and also something that I'm really present to along the lines of experience is just the relationships and contacts we have. I've been able to look through some of my past communications in the time that I've been working on this, and I realized so many different services and businesses and local entities have really stepped up. They remember us. They, just did incredibly, just profoundly wonderful work in working quickly. And there's just so many people I'm going to have to list to try to thank in the process. But it's really so amazing to see the communication going on, because after that kind of bumpy period, even on a compressed timeline and just with such urgency, people are sort of working independently and really shining and doing the best they can really showing off. And I'm just blown away by people's anticipation, what they're thinking of, how they're problem solving and being self-directed. That really, really helps a really humble organization like ours. And we can focus on getting the information out and giving people, setting the conditions and giving the people a chance to speak.
Yeah. And, it's going to be interesting, because whenever you're in a new place for the first time, there are going to be hiccups. And we don't know, is this going to work? Is this going to be something we come back to that we're going to have a great time at? We're optimistic. We sure hope so. But, we're realist as well. We'll see. In another week, we'll know for sure. My fingers crossed that it all works out. Dependent on so many factors, but all the ingredients are there. The question is, will they mix properly? That's the goal. That's what it's really all about. But boy, it's been something. We've been at this for so many months. Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. I just hope people, if they're moved to display some gratitude and thank people, help out, lend a hand, check in with people. It's really, really important. And, make some new friends. I'm planning to. and enjoy yourselves. Have some fun. I think it's something we all need.
Yeah. There was an incident. I'm reading about this right now, actually, on an airplane leaving another hacker conference in Las Vegas that took place last weekend. DEF CON is huge. It's about 30,000 people. It's a totally different event. You meet all kinds of amazing people there and have all kinds of fun. I hate Vegas, though, with a passion that I cannot even begin to describe. But, they are the coolest people in town, probably for the year during that weekend. But get this. This is from the Register, so it's not going to be a completely stupid story, but it's kind of a stupid story. A passenger on a Delta Airlines flight from Las Vegas to Atlanta after DEF CON is suspected of jamming the in-flight Wi-Fi and broadcasting an unauthorized network in what could amount to a federal offense. It seems like someone forgot the old truism. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Yeah, okay, I guess we just had to say that. News of the incident began circulating late yesterday when flight watchers spotted aircraft communications addressing and reporting system. I'd never heard of them before. They're called ACARS. Messages from the crew of Delta Flight 591 indicating that something was up with the Wi-Fi and that they suspected a passenger was to blame. I'm going to read you the message. Hey, Alert Corp Security. This is all caps. We have a PAX, P-A-X. Do you know what P-A-X means, Kyle?
Passenger.
It does. You're right. How'd you know that?
I don't know.
I never would have guessed.
What seemed intuitive.
What's the X for?
The incredibly long remaining letters in the word passenger.
Okay, so anytime...
The long string of characters.
Anytime you want to jump over all the letters in the rest of the word, you just put an X there.
Yeah.
All right. Explains 9X.
Yeah, and social media companies.
Can you use that in German? That would be very handy. But we'll talk later.
Maybe. I mean, it would be used so frequently.
So, hey, Alert Corp Security, we have a PAX on that has created a scam Wi-Fi called Delta Wi-Fi Fast. We believe they are trying to scam the OTH PAX. Okay, OTH, of course, means off the hook. That's our other AS show.
I think it's other.
Oh, now it means other. Okay.
Other passengers.
Fine, fine. OTH. Okay, that's yeah. The first note. Several minutes later, the flight crew followed up with a second message stating they had little additional info at the time, but pointing the blame at a bunch of packs. Wow, I see how they use it now. Yeah, you're just a bunch of packs. Wow. It's a derogatory term.
Were they charging for this internet? I mean, was it free?
We'll get to that. A bunch of packs that were at a cyber conference in LAS, which I guess LAS means Las Vegas, who, quote, were able to jam our WIF. Wait, why would you... Oh, I'm sorry. I misread that. It is Wi-Fi. It wasn't WIF. I thought it was two Fs. And broadcast their own signal. All right. I don't claim to be a technical genius or an engineer even, you know, somebody who understands all the nuances of technology and the latest in computer gizmos and things like that. But I believe when you have devices of various sorts, and they could be computers, they can be telephones, cell phones, that is, intelligent phones, smartphones, you have the ability, and Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, you have the ability to create these things known as hotspots. Hotspots. And when you create a hotspot, you can give the hotspot a name. And that name can be basically a combination of characters that form words that could say anything you want, really. If you go through the East Village of New York City,
they're hilarious,
and you start scanning for Wi-Fi hotspots there, oh my God, the things you will see, and it'll go on forever. It will go on forever. And you'll see messages to you about why you shouldn't use their Wi-Fi, it's not censored in any way. So if I understand correctly, and Kyle, please correct me if you think I'm wrong, but somebody simply turned on their device and opened up a hotspot, which allows anybody with the password to connect to you. They just simply said Delta Wi-Fi fast. Maybe they were making a comment about the Delta Wi-Fi, saying, yes, Delta Wi-Fi is fast. Or maybe they were being mischievous and trying to make people think, hey, there's a faster Wi-Fi, but I can't connect to it because I don't have the password, because most Wi-Fi systems ask for passwords. Of course, everyone in the media, that is assuming that they're out to get people's information. I don't know who would go to a random hotspot, Delta or not Delta, and enter your master password for everything that you own and have access to. It doesn't make any sense. It seems to me, just based on what I've seen so far, what I've read so far, all this was somebody turning on a hotspot on one of their devices on a plane. And now they're being threatened with a federal offense for that? I hope this person remains forever anonymous, because you don't deserve to deal with all the ignorance that will be coming your way if you ever do fess up to this. I've never opened up a hotspot on a plane. I didn't know it was such a big deal. You could say the people that were trying to access it were committing a crime because they were trying to access something that they had no account on. It's ridiculous when people that don't understand technology start making the rules.
Yeah, by far wasn't the worst thing you could be doing with infotainment systems on airplanes. There have been a lot of other stories and a lot of worse things, but I don't know. That's sort of beyond the scope of the conversation. But yeah, that exuberance, I think, just be considerate of others and, be careful, we're wandering way off, but yeah, mm-hmm. There could be unforeseen consequences for your actions, and they could put others at risk, but also, it could be misinterpreted and misunderstood.
When I saw this, I heard that they had jammed the airplane signals, they had caused all kinds of mayhem, and the more I read about it, the more it seems like all they did was name a hotspot. I'm open to being wrong if there was more to this story, but what I am looking at right now, I've read through several stories, made no mention of anything actually being jammed, of the Wi-Fi that Delta offered. Actually, I did read that Delta turned off their Wi-Fi because they didn't want any confusion. And I don't know what they were thinking, because when you turn off your own quote-unquote legitimate Wi-Fi and only leave the one that says it's the legitimate Wi-Fi, you're confusing people by doing that, because they're going to go there and assume it's legitimate.
Isn't it just that they're spoofing, right? Like, the terminology's incorrect? Like, it wasn't a jam. That would have been, like, increased power that is on those channels, on those frequencies, and it would basically dominate the existing Wi-Fi, shutting it off.
Right. Now, did that happen? If that happened, okay, that's a different story.
But it sounds like it's an attempted spoof of the SSID that the plane uses to sort of trick people, as you said, into logging in and whatever, paying them in bitcoins, or I don't know how they do that.
This was the flight crew, though, spreading this around, saying that somebody is trying to jam
our Wi-Fi. Well, they're busy. They have things
to do. Well, then why are you talking about the Wi-Fi in the first place? Fly the damn plane.
Well, because somebody complained, and then it escalated and went to them, and so now they're trying to steer and handle this technical thing that they don't even know what the heck they're talking about, and somebody's afraid in the back, and they have to, you know, stay in command of the situation and not, you know, panic too much because they have a plane to land.
All right, well, let me read some more from this Register article, because there is a little bit more information here. A poster on X. Okay, that's what we're going to go for. We're going to go for people tweeting. All right, fine. They speculated. They weren't even there. They're speculating. Okay, that's fine, too. We're all speculating. They speculated that the culprit was trying to fish for passenger credentials by setting up the fake Wi-Fi network. Okay, first of all, what makes a Wi-Fi network fake? You know, it's Wi-Fi. It's a network. It's there. It's a network if people connect to it. I don't know if it's fake or not. I don't know if that's the right word.
I think the term is rogue.
Okay, rogue, fine. Although, you know, when you buy your ticket, does it say thou shalt not create rogue Wi-Fi networks or whatever? I don't know.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Now, a Facebook post.
It should be in the video.
If you want to get a little more cerebral here. A Facebook post shared to Reddit, so now you have a lot of legitimate sources here, claimed that the incident involved a de-authentication attack that kicked users off the legitimate network before bringing up their own, which included a fake landing page, possibly using a device like a Wi-Fi pineapple, which can broadcast fake networks, perform de-auth attacks, and the like. Now we're getting more interesting. This was not in many of the stories, because that's a little too technical. But if that's what they were doing, okay. Now you got a story. Now I want to hear more. A commenter in a thread on the hacking subreddit claimed to have been at the terminal in Las Vegas and said the individual was doing the same thing to airport Wi-Fi. All right. Well, you know, we're getting a lot of people claiming that they were there, but no real way to prove they were there. Anyway, the Facebook and X posts both claim that law enforcement was waiting at the gate. I don't know what they're waiting for. Though a post in the Delta subreddit included a comment from someone claiming to have been on the flight who didn't see any police waiting at the gate. So you see, the first casualty with rogue Wi-Fi hotspots is the truth. Regardless of what actually transpired, once the plane landed, Delta Airlines confirmed the incident to the Register and said, "We are fully investigating to gather a complete set of facts, which will take time," a Delta spokesperson said in an email. "We will partner with federal law enforcement and aviation regulators to ensure the incident is thoroughly investigated." Delta further noted that the safety of the plane crew and passengers were never in question, and no aircraft systems were affected. That should be the lead. That should be the most important part of the story, because when you go seven paragraphs in to realize this didn't really have any effect on the plane itself, it was just an issue of access and something with a name it shouldn't have, it's not that responsible. Keep in mind, you know, if you're on a plane and you turn on your phone or your computer and you look for hotspots, you will see hotspots from other people. You will see Dave's iPhone. You know, you will see all kinds of names. You just won't see Delta Wi-Fi Fast, because that might seem to be something it's not. The airline reiterated that the flight was leaving following the wrap-up of Black Hat and DEF CON, suggesting it suspected an attendee was behind the bad decision. Like, that's what they call it, bad decision. So that's what's going on in the air. And you know, since we're running a hacker conference ourselves, we advise people, try not to get in trouble, because there's a lot of stupidity out there, and sometimes the stupidity is on our end as well. But a lot of people don't understand technology. A lot of people will get it wrong. A lot of people will jump to conclusions. Just like you see in this news story, there may be some truth to it. But the way it's being reported, go to Fox News. See how they report it. Tell me that's accurate. All right, from one incident on a plane to another, and this one I think is by far more serious. This involves a Porter Airlines flight in Canada. It was canceled last week after a young child refused to sit down and buckle up. Did you hear about this, Kyle?
No.
Yeah, this kid absolutely, steadfastly refused to buckle his seatbelt or sit down. The pilot said, okay, well, then we're going to turn the whole plane around. Basically, the parent and crew repeatedly tried unsuccessfully to secure the child in the seat. And they had to return to Victoria International Airport in British Columbia. They removed the parent and child and their baggage that delayed the Toronto-bound flight. It delayed it past the closing of the runway. So everybody had to disembark. They had to take a flight out the next day because a child refused to buckle their seatbelt. That's where airfare is these days. That's where children are these days. What do we do about the kids?
They're passengers too. They have rights.
Yes, yeah, so you don't have the right to not buckle your seatbelt on a plane, do you?
Yeah, but they have to be accommodated for, and if they're not willing to go, then you can't really make them go, and that's part of it.
What kind of a conversation do you think that family had when they finally got home?
I don't know. There's going to be some conversations, though.
Brandon, we've talked about this. We appreciate your spirit, but at some point it becomes inconvenient to us. Therefore, we are canceling our contract with you and sending you back. Yeah, well, you got to be harsh sometimes with these kids. They just don't seem to know. That was... I'd be mad. On the plane, I'd be mad. Do you think they covered all those passengers' hotel stays? And if so...
Doubtfully.
Yeah, well, you know what? If they're anything like Air Canada, they won't even acknowledge that it was their fault. Well, actually, technically, it wasn't their fault, but still, you know, you didn't get the people where they were supposed to go. And when that happens, you're supposed to take care of them. I'm referring to something that happened to us last year with Air Canada, where they didn't make a connection to their own flight, and... we had to pay $500 to stay in a hotel for one night and be inconvenienced, and nobody took responsibility. Damn shame. Okay, another plane story, Kyle. I know you're working on conference stuff right now, but we're almost done. But I want your opinion on this. I don't know if you heard this this latest Trump story, which is now on the front page everywhere. I heard about it a couple of days ago, knew it was going to be fodder for the late night talk shows. Unfortunately, Steve Colbert is no longer on. SNL is not producing new episodes until the fall. This is a great story. No one's talking about it in that particular realm, so I think we need to devote some attention to it. But basically, did you hear about this, Kyle? Basically, when Trump went to where was it? Turkey. Yeah, he wound up flying back. He flew there in the Qatari jet that was given to him by the government of Qatar.
Yeah, yeah. You told me that this wild thing that makes no sense.
Uh-huh.
This was already over. He went on the old plane because it was more, you know, advanced and whatever for the situation they were in. So they let the other one go, and he was like talking about it going to UK. Yeah,
yeah. And then
he got
mad at the Times for reporting that the new plane didn't have the same defensive capabilities that the old plane had, and that there was some kind of a threat from Iran, which, you know, we were in the process of bombing. He's next door in Turkey for some reason. Oh, yeah, Erdogan's a fascist, right? He had to pay respects. Okay, so on the way out, he concocted this wild excuse to, you know, show off the new plane to people on a base somewhere, and he was going to ride the old one for old time's sake. Turns out that's not what happened at all. Turns out, again, according to the New York Times and Washington Post, there was a third plane involved. Yeah, a third plane. He basically he did like a Beatles type thing. You ever watch those early Beatles films where they're trying to escape from their fans and they jump in one limousine and then they exit that limousine and go into another one that's parked next to it and that one is the one that leaves and the girls are screaming, chasing after the wrong one?
Yeah, like in The Road Case or something. I think didn't a Mazda CEO do this too?
I don't know. I've never been part of this kind of thing.
Italy or something?
So basically, here's what happened. He boarded the older plane from the left side door in view of cameras. And news organizations, including the New York Times, and all that media reported that he traveled on it to Britain, and in Britain he switched back to the newer plane. Okay, that was the story that we were told. But instead of flying out aboard that older, powder blue, modified 747, Trump was whisked off that plane, and Kyle, this is important, he was whisked off that plane via a catering container that had been lifted to the opposite side of the plane from where the journalist traveling with him boarded. The president was then taken to a third plane, which he flew in secret to Britain, and then did everything in reverse, got off that other plane, got back on the old plane, and emerged as if he had been riding it the whole time. Now, what's particularly crazy about this is that he knew there was a threat against the other Air Force One, the original Air Force One as well. He was content to leave all of the journalists on that plane and have them fly with that risk known, rather than protect everybody. He protected his own ass. Well, which, by the way, speaking of his ass, how the hell, and you worked in an airport once, Kyle, how the hell could someone like Trump fit in a catering container? These are the things that they push down the aisles and serve peanuts and drinks and things. You're telling me that Trump was crammed in one of those things?
Well, if that's actually true, it's probably one that's built for these custom interiors that have much wider aisleways. But that's not, I mean, that's nothing personal. I just think he's so tall and so of such stature.
I know you didn't call the president wide.
No, it's just his scale is so unmatched that it requires the big Lantus with the military cookie sheet.
You better stop while you
can. And then the cargo webbing, and then they you know, they got to have the experienced guy make sure the hydraulics don't get overloaded. But anyway, yeah.
Okay. Somewhere there's a wise guy Secret Service agent who came up with this idea and said, you know what we can do, guys? We can get Trump into this container here. No, listen to me. We can do that. And we tell the press, and then we do it from the back when nobody's looking and nobody sees inside. I want a picture of this. I want to see what it looked like. But can you imagine? That's the image. Our president is running scared and is basically hiding in containers, in airplanes, while the press is put in danger. It's nuts. It's the craziest thing I've heard in a long time. I love it.
Yeah, the self-importance is admirable.
Good Lord. Okay, well, no doubt you'll be hearing more about that in weeks, months, years to come. I'm sure there's more to tell here. Speaking of Trump, those of you in the mood for ultra-right-wing rally might want to show up in Nassau County tomorrow. No, is it tomorrow? Is it? Actually, I think it's Friday. Yeah, he's going to tour police facilities in Nassau County on Friday. And you know what that means? That means he's going to be hanging out with local white supremacist Bruce Blakeman, who is the Nassau County executive. He is going to be bowing down to ICE agents and their reign of terror. By the way, as part of our build-up of the conference, I was driving a big truck today. Yeah, once a year I get to drive a big truck.
Big old truck.
Yeah, and I got lost. I got lost on Long Island. I thought I was on Route 111, and I wound up on Comac Road. I made a wrong turn somehow off Sunrise Highway. I don't know what I did wrong. I'll find out one day. But while I was cursing and trying to figure out how to get out of there, I realized, hey, I'm in the neighborhood I always hear alerts about for ICE raids. This is where ICE is raiding people and terrorizing families and things like that. And it was really it was kind of sobering. It really was. And people aren't on the street. That's certainly for sure.
I bet they're setting up rogue access points, too.
Well, you have to. You almost have to. So anyway, yeah, these are the people that Trump is visiting to strengthen and support. he will visit the Nassau County Police Academy. And, of course, Nassau County Police have been empowered to work with ICE by aforementioned Bruce Blakeman, unlike here in Suffolk County. He will visit the Nassau County Police Academy to highlight the FBI's 2025 crime report that shows the largest year-to-year decrease ever in violent crime. Okay, so this is funny. Do you recall, before the National Guard was sent into Washington, D.C., and people forget this, the National Guard is occupying Washington, D.C. They're still doing it. People in Washington, D.C. said, this is not necessary. Crime is way down. You know, crime has gone down a lot. People in New York City said, crime has gone down. Some crimes have gone up. Yeah, there's still violence, absolutely. But overall, look at the statistics, crime has gone down. And Trump and his ilk said, boulder dash. You know, that is not true. We need to send all these troops and agents and whatnot and have raids. And after doing that, they said, hey, look, the crime rate is down. So now Trump is trying to claim that Washington, D.C. has a lower crime rate because he sent the National Guard in. When that was the claim before they were sent in, that was the claim against having them sent in. Same thing with Nassau County, New York City. The crime rate has gone down in many, many places. And it's really got not much to do with who is in power, whether it's Democrats or Republicans. There are all kinds of sociological factors and reasons and things like that we can explore. But here is Bruce Blakeman trying to take credit for that as well, and it's utter nonsense. Trump is going to come by on Friday, and he's going to try and bolster Blakeman's flagging gubernatorial campaign against Kathy Hochul. I don't know.
You almost said Pelosi, right?
I almost did. it's very hot in this room again. I'm starting to get
it always does.
I haven't thought about Nancy Pelosi in a while.
Well, maybe you should.
How's she doing?
Give some reverence. Yeah, she's fine. Leave her out of this.
I don't know. It annoys me so much to see these people just spreading this truth and to have it just believed. You know, think about if Biden were in power and what happened to gasoline prices happened during his reign, the way these people would be acting, it would be so much more passionate than the way they're just gritting their teeth right now.
You know, my impulse is to critique, but it's like, it feels like stating the obvious, or like to call him a this or a that, you know, against the nation, you know, getting all like, you know, righteous. But what's the point? It's so obvious.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Sorry, interrupted, but...
Well, you were waiting until I sipped coffee, but that's fine. yes, absolutely. I don't like the hypocrisy where, you know, something is really bad when it's the guy you don't like who's in charge, and when it's the guy that you do like in charge and something's bad, then you just let it go. You know, say this about people on the left. They tend to complain no matter who's in charge. they do, and sometimes with even more passion towards those closer to them politically. I think that's kind of self-defeatist, but it is what it is. And
self-defeating.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Do you need some water?
No,
should I turn the fan on?
No, the fan just makes too much noise.
Well, I think it's also...
If I pass out before the hour, just play the outro.
It's also like confirmation bias, right? Like they're just drawing conclusions that work for their worldview, as though no one else has a worldview of their own.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't blame people who are misled. I really don't, because, you know, I've been misled. I'm sure we've all been misled. I'm sure we all will be misled. I'm sure maybe some of us will even mislead in one way or another. But you can make a mistake. You can trust somebody who is not trustworthy. You can get ripped off. And, you know, a lot of these poor people who support this guy have been ripped off a lot, particularly cryptocurrency people and people buying the latest Trump phones and Trump stakes and Trump casinos and Trump college. It's so pathetic.
His merchosphere.
So, you know, they're paying the price. There's no question about that. I don't blame them. I feel sorry for them. And I wish they'd find a place where they could be listened to and not ripped off. That would be nice. Where was I going with this? Then there's the second type of person who knows what they're doing and just spreads lies and takes advantage of those people and hurts the rest of us, and they're evil incarnate, you know? And the people who follow along, they're just looking to be heard and basically going down the wrong road, in my opinion.
Absolutely, yeah. The charismatic leadership at play from his disciples is sickening. It is itself its own rot. But speaking of merch, we were in the hardware store and we saw like a squeezy, squeaky rubber chickens. But yeah, you picked up one and it looked like the guy that, you know, the one we're talking about.
It was a Trump doll.
Yeah,
a Trump doll. It just squawk when you squeeze.
You walked up and you gave that thing, I mean, you know, the pressure to make it function, and we all had a fantastic laugh at the counter.
Yeah,
it was great. I didn't even realize I was paying. I was like, that is hilarious.
The guy behind the counter, we exchanged a look, and I was like, you know, really? But, you know, I don't care what side he's on or whatever. He doesn't know what side I'm on, although he can probably guess. This was just silly, but funny. And sometimes you have to not take things that seriously.
Well, and there's all kinds of merch out there. It's not just his.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, one thing I noticed over the last week is that Staples became Party Center.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've actually
Party
been...
Zone? What is it? Party Zone? Party Center?
I've been celebrating.
Party House?
Yeah.
We don't know what it's called. Yeah,
I picked up some things for my party to celebrate that. Yeah.
They have an image problem. It's like when Kinko's welcomed FedEx in, and it became FedEx Kinko's. And I knew that wasn't
going
to last.
Oh, there's a lot of these types of things going on, though, and it's sort of like ghost kitchens or whatever. It's like, oh, we don't want to have retail. Oh. Like, we don't want to pay for property. So, like, let's just cooperate and be absorbed by some place that can afford the overhead and can just direct people to our products and services
in-house. I still don't understand ghost kitchens. Now, okay, there is a kitchen there because the food's coming from somewhere, right? Or is it getting delivered by an Amazon drone?
No, it's a kitchen that has all the ingredients to make things for several different menus.
Okay, but food doesn't work that way. You have to be somebody with skill in particular types of cuisine. You know, a great Indian chef can't just, you know, make Italian food just like that. I mean, yeah, he could probably do a decent job, but he's not going to be the finest Italian chef. It's like
different type of chef.
What is it? A robot or is it?
Well, I think there's ways of characterizing the expertise in different avenues of the culinary world, and that's a certain type of thing. Like you think about catering on like ships or something. They're doing all types of different food, including fusion. None of it, I mean, really all that great.
They have a lot of chefs on ships.
Some of it's spectacular. And so they can maybe specialize because of their scale. So that's a bad example, but. You know, I mean, don't they have the gas stations that have the pizza and yeah, I'm sure that's a great
example. That's the
example
you want to go with.
Yeah, I mean, plenty of things get along. They go well, like bread and butter.
Well, I don't know. I don't understand. I understand the concept of wanting to, like, not pay rent and also serve as many people as possible. But you can't tell me that you can get decent Thai food in a place where nobody has come from anywhere near Thailand.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that it maybe serves certain types of food that people's expectations aren't really that high for, or they're just but it helps the restaurants franchise in a way without incurring the costs of like getting utilities run, and what we know from a lot of small business owners that do this and specialize in great very specific cuisine that they have a cultural affinity and identity with and are sharing with people through their business. So, like, yeah, that's wholly distinct. But people trying to, like, create an assembly line and really scale up and franchise, maybe those things are a way to do it in more places at once.
You know, we could all go to the supermarket and get, like, a taco kit and go home and make tacos. it's not going to be the same place, the same quality as if you go to a traditional Mexican place, any Mexican place really, and have somebody who knows what they're doing do it right, you know, and not take it from a kid in the store. And I just feel this is like the equivalent of AI making food. You know, everything is modular, everything is a computer equation of one sort or another. And, you know, it's like watching one of those films that's completely AI made. The people are talking in such a stilted way, and you can tell by their expressions, you can tell by their words, you can tell by the syntax, this ain't real.
Well, it's a lot of, like, the direct-to-consumer businesses, too, where you're like, this doesn't feel like it has a story. It's just something somebody thought up a business plan for.
Yeah, and, you know, there's going to come a day, not too long in the future, where we're talking to people face-to-face, and we realize, hey, there's nothing there. You know, we're just talking to somebody who's, doing a bunch of if-then statements and coming back with the right phrase. I mean, I know there are some people like that, but they're
sorry.
It's different. It's
no
somehow
offense.
Different. Yeah. I'm a little afraid, but I don't think, and I sure hope that it'll ever reach the point where we genuinely can't tell the difference. It'll get hard. It'll get challenging. Hopefully we get some kind of control over it before it gets out of control, and it can get out of control.
Well, I think the thing that it needs is errors.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't mistake like humans do.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing. It's too clean. I mean, a lot of art and stuff can look like that. It doesn't have the sort of grit, the idiosyncrasies. Like, take film and photography that is analog, where you're processing a film and a type of material, and you're using liquid, and there's sensitive coatings and things. When you're doing that, you inherently pick up debris and dust if you're not in a really clean lab and, mm-hmm. and you don't have all the right tools. And so there's little marks and things about like just handling that negative that are like a record where the grooves wear out eventually because, you know, if you play a song back, unless it's, especially if it's an acetate, but like vinyl does wear. And
I've never had grooves wear out of my vinyl.
No, probably not. Depends on how much weight you're putting down. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the sensitivity of art and like stuff that's handmade. It has little, you can even get fingerprints, but like you get little, traces, artifacts of the process. Whereas, a large language model or something that is, creating art, it's going to make mistakes, but they're going to look real clean and then like more glaring, I think, as a result to most humans. But that's not like across the board. I think there is a lot of exceptions and there's a lot of people working to make sure that stuff isn't discernible in that way.
I saw a commercial today. No kidding. I really saw this. I think it was for some kind of an oil company or something where this guy was the owner of the company. And he was in bed, and somebody was talking on the phone, making an appointment for, emergency delivery or something like that. And you hear the representative talking to him, talking to them, reassuring them, saying, "Yes, somebody will be right there." And the tag was basically, "When you have AI, you don't have to worry about answering every call." This was AI basically taking care of a serious situation while this guy was sleeping. And I think that's just such a really naive way to look at what AI can do. You don't put it in charge of things like that where you really need some human supervision. And, the way to tell if you're talking to AI or a human is insult it. And if they just keep coming back and asking the same question, you're either talking to somebody very determined or you are hitting AI hard. Hey, we're out of time. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Wish us luck this weekend. We will see you next week, and we'll be either in a very good mood or a very bad mood. Kyle, you want to say goodnight before the intro comes up?
Bye, friends. Thanks for listening.
Good night.
What do you want? Gold? Women? Golden women? Stick with me and you'll have them all.
Every man got a sword and a shield and a knife. Run for the enemy, take away him life. Look to the left, look to the right. Enemies are run like thief in the night. Kill, kill, let blood spill. Kill, kill, the word of the king, no mercy. Show no mercy, sword well sharp and warriors thirsty. 1 million, you're ready. When the smoke clear, be a dead body. You're
fight for the king, we die for the king. If a boy say a word, then a straight flame. 1 million, you're ready. When the smoke clear up here, then body. Yeah, we fight for the king, we die for the king. If a boy say a word, then a straight flame. When you fight for the iron throne, and you wear that crown, you're on the zone. Don't play around. So when you fight for the iron throne, and you wear that crown, you're on the zone. Kill another, not the least of the least in this game of throne. Your life cheap. Conquer your city, burn it down with fire. 1,000 rise, 1,000 fall. Fire for the traitor, the spy and the liar. We don't care, kill them all. Them a fight for, yeah. Alright then, when the smoke clear, we are gonna see who's standing, when the smoke clear, when you fight for the eye.